This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 6, Episode 2. How do I stretch my finger? Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we get a great question about how to stretch your finger. But don't worry, you'll find out more all about it in the show. We also get distracted a little bit by selection issues and forget to talk about spin bowling. And we have a question about how to get your batting set up absolutely perfect as per the manual. Find out how we do that on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to coaching better cricket, or to playing better cricket. My name's David Hinchliffe, and I'm here every week helping you do just that. But I couldn't do it on my own, so alongside me are two very fine coaches, the first of which is Mark Garraway, the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. Hello, Garris.
Hiya, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Have you been having a good week, starting to build up now the festive period is out of the way?
Oh, yeah, we're having a great week so far. And, yeah, everybody's back in the swing of things. And you've got that first week out of your system. And looking out the window of the office at the moment, I've got the Glastonbury Tour. And then behind it, I've got snow on the mountains of Bath, as if there are any mountains there. But there's definitely hills and it's definitely snowy.
Well, it's that time of year, isn't it? You're going to get some snow around. But you can still get plenty of work done.
Correct.
Also joining me is the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hello, David.
And you've had a big week as well?
Yeah, busy. It is getting, there's a lot on at the moment. We're doing a lot of work with the guys at school who have obviously had a little bit of time off for Christmas, but then things are happening with club cricket as well. And yeah, there's a lot going on, which is exciting at the moment.
Yeah, I started with my rep level under 11s last week. We had a little trial session with about 25 of them, and we'll have another one on Saturday, and hopefully then we'll be in a position to decide on the best sort of 14 or 15 to take through into the summer.
So there's the big cut coming up, is there?
Yeah, it's a tricky one because there's not a huge variation in standards. You know, there's always a few where you just know straight away. But there's a lot where there's not a big difference in quality between them. So the test for me is to identify the ones who I think can improve the most quickly, I suppose. And they'll be the ones that I want to focus on over the period of the coming months. But that's tricky because sometimes you get one kid who's not very good, but he improves very quickly. And that's the one you want to get hold of, really, isn't it, Gareth?
It is the one, but it's often difficult to make a decision on who that's going to be because we don't have a crystal ball, do we? And that's the situation that you know you find yourself in, and loads of coaches find themselves in around the world. It's always being involved in thousands of selection processes. It's always those last two or three players, and sometimes maybe one or two players that it's between, isn't it? And they're the discussions that take the longest because a lot of squads and a lot of teams generally pick themselves. But it comes down to those last two, and I suppose it's down to what you are looking for them to show you. And in your case, you've put your nailed your colours to the mast, and it's about trying to pick the one that's going to benefit the most and learn the most over the interim period.
Yeah, I think so. Certainly, at the level that I'm coaching at the moment, you want guys who it's not necessarily about winning matches and you know putting in great performances, but it's about developing people and developing that love for the game that they're going to carry through. And I think that is the key to it for me. And if we can get guys who we can develop, then I'll be happy with that.
Do you think that should be a remit for the district or for the county that they say this is how we want junior cricket to work? Because obviously different coaches, the under-12s, the under-13s, the under-10s may all have a very different look on that. So would your life be easier if that was governed from as a group decision for the district that you're in, for instance?
That's a very good question, actually. I think, fortunately enough, the region that I am working for, that's what they want to do anyway. It's a development region anyway, which means they don't participate in a active competition. They only play friendlies in the summer, so that makes things easier from my point of view. I think you'll always get the coaches who are looking at results over development, and that could be an area where you could try and work on reducing that kind of thing. But generally, I think because especially the funding for the regions where I am are all based around performance indicators, which aren't necessarily to do with winning matches, that the focus of the regions tend to be participation and performance and participation over performance and helping players improve and develop a love for the game rather than just getting the best players to do as well as they can and to get results where one region beats another region and then there's no, you know, but in the long run, what does that matter if you've got players who are making up the numbers and you lose them to the game of cricket?
It's a good question that Sam asked, though, isn't it? Because I think leadership in that is absolutely crucial. And I'm very lucky. My boss, who runs all of the cricket here, all of the sports here at school, has been very clear in the way that the school wants it to be run. And it's very much along developing the individuals rather than necessarily winning trophies and cups. And that makes our life easy because we don't have to have individual slants then on it. We're working towards one means, whether it be in fencing, whether it be in modern pentathlon or in cricket or rugby.
Was that the gist of your question, Lavers? Were you thinking about those guys who maybe focus a bit too much on winning games and not so much on developing individuals?
Yeah, possibly. I just think, I don't think there's always going to be a right or wrong answer to it. That as long as there's clarity across a group of people, though, it gives everyone an idea of where they actually fit in and what their purpose is. So what your purpose as a coach is, what the requirements of the child is. The child knows that he's going in a situation where it's completely performance related or there's a different view to it. So I think one of the key things is making sure that aims and objectives are clear and that there's an air of transparency throughout the whole club or school or region or whatever it is. And the more everyone's singing from the same hymn sheet in terms of what they want to achieve, then the more success you like to have in the long run, I think.
Yeah, so what you were driving at really was it doesn't matter so much what the goal is as long as everybody knows what the goal is.
Yeah, absolutely. If your goal and if your agreed goal is that results are the bottom line, then everyone will work accordingly towards that. If your goal is something different, then people will work in that direction. And it might be that different age groups have different goals because of where they are. So, for instance, if you think about a county side, ultimately, when it comes to the county first 11, it's largely going to be very results driven a lot of the time. Whereas if you go up to the same county and look at their under 11s team, you would imagine that the results are neither here nor there, really. It's, are we picking the right people? Are we exposing the right people to the right situations? And are they getting the experience and getting the information that's going to help them develop as cricketers in the long run?
So, yeah, the challenge for me in this Saturday and then the week following that, or the couple of days following that, is to decide on who these guys are. And that's going to be challenging.
It's one of the toughest things of a coach's job, mate.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's nice to be. It's a nice position to be in because normally, if you're coaching club cricket or whatever, you're just happy to have 11 players on the field. But to be able to select a squad from a large number of players is a nice problem to have. I'd rather be in that position than the other way around, definitely. And we were going to talk a little bit about spin. And coaching spinners, but I think we've been rattling on so long about trials and and that kind of thing. We'll have to save that for another week, unless either of you got something exciting to say that you wanted to quickly mention, or we can just do it next week.
I've got lots of exciting things to say about it actually, but we'll wait until next week for those exciting things.
I'm similar to Gareth, although I've got nothing exciting to say. Yeah, I agree. We should wait till next week.
Okay, exciting and brief, perhaps I should
It's
have said.
poised. We're poised for next week.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, we've got some really good feedback on the website regarding the article that you did recently on getting spinners to spin the ball more by using the hip. So, but we'll save that. If you're listening, AB, we'll save that for next week.
Oh, so your discussion is going very well on LinkedIn, David, although that's a separate thing, but it seems to be very, very well, it seems to be of a lot of interest to a lot of people, the one that you've started on there, which is going
Yeah.
very, very well. I've just had a few more people send a message through.
What's the topic?
Oh, here we go. Can club spinners develop the art in the time they have available? Is the initial question, isn't it? And then you go on and elaborate and talk about it in a few different areas of it. But yeah, it's basically do people bowl a more defensive manner as a spinner because they don't have the time available to them to develop the skills necessary?
Yeah. Well, time was one of the
One
possible
of my It's
factors,
one of a
wasn't
few
it? Yeah,
factors, isn't it? Yeah.
exactly. Yeah. So anyway, well, but I think we'll tie all those things together for next week. So maybe that's a bit of homework if you're listening. Find the Cricket Coaches Worldwide LinkedIn page and go and have a little look at that. But for now, let's do the yes/no round to finish this introductory section. That's three questions that can only be answered yes or no to, no matter how much more that anyone wants to say. I'm in charge of the questions. Here comes the first one. First question: take off your coat or you won't feel the benefit.
Yes.
Second question: cricket needs to review its conventions to stay relevant to kids.
Yes.
Third question: learning is a skill.
Yes.
Yes.
I've pinched straight from you, Labour's, that last one.
Yeah.
Let's pick a couple of questions out from the mailbag this week. These are sent in by listeners to the show, or perhaps people who read the Pitch Vision Academy website, and they want their burning questions about cricket answered. And I thought, who better to ask than these two fine coaches? And you can send in your question to us if you've got one of those by emailing coach@pitchvision.com. There's other ways you can do it as well, and we'll tell you about them at the end of the show. The first person who's done that is Sarvesh. And Sarvesh says, "Hi, coach. I'm a top order batsman. I always struggle in getting my setup right. In all the coaching manuals I've read or seen, the ideal stance is feet shoulder width apart, knees flexed, eyes level, head still. But the most important factor in stance, according to me, is where the bat is rested in the stance. The most common is the bat behind the back toe, but modern generation players use a pre-loaded backlift in the stance. So I want to know, how can I perform a perfect grip stance and backlift using my stance correctly with a pre-loaded backlift?"
First of all, I'd say it's there's going to be an element of individuality to everything. And I know that people or textbooks or manuals will say that there is an ideal, but I think something that you will have picked up over the last few months or last 6 months or last couple of years through our conversations is that there's not generally one ideal. There are options all the time. And everyone has options, and there will be options that are better suited to some people than others. And these options can concern how your feet are positioned. Do you like a wider base or a narrower base, or straighter knees or bent more bent knees, a more crouched position? Do you prefer to have a preloaded backswing, or do you like to keep your hands low? And they're not right or wrong answers, and they all have different pluses and minuses, and they all work with different people in different ways. So I don't think you should be forcing yourself into something that isn't necessarily the best method for you just because you see it happening, but there are benefits to different people that they will use. So obviously the preloaded backlift is something that cuts out some of the movement, so it can simplify what people do. However, a low starting point with a backswing creates a stretch reflex action slightly similar to you'd see in a fast bowler. who might be perceived to have a slingy action, which is actually a more powerful movement as a batter. So starting up high does have its benefits in terms of simplicity, but it may also have its drawbacks. Ultimately, that you may find that 50% of the population prefer one thing and 50% prefer another, and it's sometimes dangerous to commit to one because you like the idea of it, because you might be committing to something which is outside of your natural set of skills. So, yeah, I would say keep your options open. I would try different things. There's not going to be a generic method that is the right thing for everyone, as we talk about a lot. It's working out the options that are going to suit you, identifying the different variables that can change, and picking out your method as best you can.
So, Gareth, how do you go about that? How do you go about deciding something like whether you tap the bat behind your back foot and then pick it up as the bowler is entering his delivery stride, compared to standing in the in the baseball stance, I suppose it's been called, although that's not quite right, but you know what I mean, with the bat up. How do you decide that? I mean, obviously you want to try both, but there's going to be a point where you think to yourself, well, I've got to go one way or the other here. So how do you decide?
Well, I think your decision comes down to, because you're right, you've got to have a go at both if you're not sure. And but I wouldn't have a particularly onerous task to do when you're trying these things. Put a bowling machine on 60 mile an hour on half volleys and see how you go trying those two different methods. As soon as we get the ball going at velocity or there's lots of lateral movement in there, then we'll probably find that we'll get a bit confused. So keep it really, really simple. Even if it might be underarm feeds or bobble feeds or whatever. And what you're looking for me, David, is which one enables me to make better contact with the ball? Which one do I feel that I'm making the better decisions in, and which one do I feel that I'm moving most effectively? Because ultimately, not necessarily in that order, those are the key facets of batting. If we're making good decisions, if we're viewing the ball well, making good decisions, if we're moving out of our stance appropriately, and we're making good contact, you can't ask for too much more than that, really. So those are the criteria, I suppose, that I would use for deciding one over the other as being your most natural way of doing stuff. But have a go at both, but don't make it too onerous. It's got to be something that's achievable. If you start pinging it around your ears at 90, then you're going to find that you probably won't be able to make a decision between the two, because it's a really tough task.
Are there any technical differences between the two? Part of the follow-up question from Savish was, how high should bat be when I'm holding it up, and should my grip change, that kind of thing. Are there any technical differences to this, that if you do go down one route or the other, there's a couple of pointers that we can give?
I don't think there is, because, and I'll give you an example of why there isn't, is that I watched a fantastic partnership in the Big Bash the other night between KP and Glenn Maxwell, who are both obviously fantastic strikers of the ball. And actually, in this innings, KP played the secondary role because Maxwell hit straps for the first time in a while and struck the ball pretty well. And really, KP's role was to knock the ball around, to give him a strike, and also to talk him through his innings a bit, because he's been struggling of late and hasn't quite put it together. But the fascinating thing for me by watching that partnership is both players are capable of hitting the ball huge distances and to access all sorts of different parts of the pitch, but their setups are completely different. And when we look at that preloaded back lift that Shahvesh is looking to have an answer for, they both do it completely differently. So again, just have a go. Some people prefer to have a slightly more closed grip with their top hand, so the hand goes around the hand a little bit more, and some people have a slightly more open one than the convention, which would have been, I suppose, two V's of your hands going straight, sort of halfway between the outside edge and the splice of the bat. Play around with it, because ultimately you'll find that they do it differently. KP's got quite a closed grip. Whereas Maxwell's got a little bit more of an open grip. So you've got to play with these things, David. And there isn't, I wouldn't say that there was a player in world cricket presently, if I think back to those images that Shahvesh talked about at the start of the question about textbook and manuals. I don't know of a player in world cricket that would do all of those things that we all learned when we started playing cricket, but those of my type of age around the 40 region, because people have developed their own ways of doing things, and I think as a coaching fraternity, we're getting better at working with people's preferences as opposed to having a very strict way of doing stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it would make coaching a lot easier if there was one exact way, and you knew
No, it
it
would make
worked
it
for
boring.
everyone,
That's
wouldn't
that w it wouldn't it would make it absolutely dull as dishwater. There would be
it?
no reason for pitchvision.com and no reason for this show, and that wouldn't be any good to anybody, and I'm sure all of our listeners would agree about that.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. I mean, what? Who? Hopefully, they would miss our sparkling repartee, though, Gareth.
Absolutely. I mean, and how can you go throughout a week without listening to this? It would be dull. I can tell you now that Sky Sports and Star Sports and all of those companies around the world would not be paying huge amounts of money to do transmissions all over the world, which ultimately pays for people to do what they do in the game of cricket if everything was done in one template.
It would be like Whopper playing tic-tac-toe against itself.
Correct.
Next question is from Yasha Warden. Yash Warden says, "Hello, how can I stretch my index finger? I get finger pain the day after bowling, and I can't grip the ball properly. Bit of a spin problem here. His finger hurts the next day and he can't bowl. That's a nightmare for a spinner, isn't it?"
Well, it is a nightmare for it, but it is something that I've been in changing rooms where people have had that exact same problem. I have to say, when I first read the question, I didn't read the next bit. I got stuck on the first statement, how can I stretch my index finger? And all sorts of different things were coming into my mind. And a story I thought I'd share at this point was a number of years ago. Mark Nicholas is now a commentator on Channel 9, and summariser on that Channel 9 was the captain of Hampshire, and we had a left-arm spinner called Rajesh Maru, who was shorter than myself,
This is going to be a good
and
story, I can feel it, everyone.
yeah, shorter than myself, but a very, very good bowler, a very accurate bowler, and played in the first team and didn't have a great time of things. And Mark went up to him and offered the advice that he needed to get more bounce. So the next day, Mark came into the Northland Road cricket ground, and there was Raj hanging off a top rail of the nets, trying to stretch himself as best he could to increase his height. And that's what came into my head when I read the first bit of that question. Obviously, it didn't work, but Raj still retained the ability to bowl a cricket ball, but bounce was never his thing. So I'm not sure how you're going to stretch your finger. But one of the things that I've seen in changing rooms, it is a recovery process, really. It is a lot of massage of the joints around the finger after they've bowled, and in fact, whilst they're bowling, to increase the blood flow around the finger, and in particular after a game, getting your fingers into warm water post bowling, and then again doing some manipulation of the joints is a good thing. Something similar to a lot of keepers do at the end of a day as well, just to get the blood circulating around and trying to prevent that stiffness in the joints, which often is associated with both spinning the ball and catching the ball repeatedly. And then another thing is to get a big ball of plasticine or blue tack as well, and do some squeezing. So get a ball of plasticine, put it in between your fingers, and just get the fingers moving, so you're actually manipulating that ball of plasticine to increase blood flow and increase the range of movement at a time where the fingers are naturally going to stiffen up. So those are the things that I've seen. In fact, somebody like Raj Beru, ironically, do. Sean Udall used to do things like that, particularly in the middle part towards the end of a season, when the number of repetitions that they've done, both in practice and in matches, has increased, and it is at a big volume. But it's something that's really useful. So to me, it's about self-massage into the finger, getting into those joints. Secondly, getting your hands into some warm water post bowling, and thirdly, using a bit of plasticine or a bit of blue tack just to keep the joint moving, and keep the ligaments and everything operational, really, at a time where you're probably going to normally just sit and do nothing, and it's going to stiffen up.
So it's more of a issue around towards the end of a season where you've got wear and tear, rather than the thing at the start of the season when your fingers aren't quite ready and they haven't toughened up yet.
No, I think it's something that you get into a routine of doing it. It's just that if you don't do those sort of things, then generally as your volume increases over the course of a season, it's not every spin of us it affects, but it's obviously affecting the guy who sent the question in. So those are the type of tactics and strategies that I've seen which have helped people to manage themselves towards the end of a season. It could be, but in this case, it happens after every time he bowls. But I would get into a routine of doing these things. So you're almost preventing the challenge or that you're faced with, as opposed to just waiting until your finger gets stiff and then do it.
Yeah, and you'll find the thing that works for you because I know certainly with wicket keeping, there's all kinds of things that I tried over the years to try, to try and do away with that pain from one day to the next of the ball hitting your hand so often, and then you just get the hang of what works for you and what you can just leave behind because it's not having any effect.
Yeah, absolutely. Have a go. I mean, have a go at one of those three things, or a couple, or a combination of those three things, and see how it goes. And then, whilst thinking, and then a little bit more of an open mind around some of those topics, you might come up with your own one. And if you do, obviously share that back into us.
Do you see this much Lavers club cricket, school cricket, or is this more of a thing that happens more to the pros because of the volume of balls that they're bowling?
Or I generally see two types of injury, I suppose, or I guess we can call them injury, but yeah, sometimes early season or even early pre-season, you see with finger spinners they'll often get the issue of the blistering, which can cause a problem. And then sometimes the more and more they bowl and the less rest they get from bowling, they can get this situation where they get the stiffness and they get the pain in the joint or in the muscle. And obviously, they're two very, very different things. There have been a number of solutions over the year to the blistering and to trying to toughen up the skin. No less than Graham Swan, I believe, weeing on his fingers, which I believe happened at one stage.
I think that was just poor technique rather than it was a strategy.
Yeah, I think, I'm not sure how effective that was, but I know that various people have tried things like that to try and toughen up the skin over the years. This is something separate, and I'd definitely say that going along the route that Gareth has discussed quite a detail there, with fast bowlers, I mean, strength and conditioning coaches and physios, fast bowlers are the people that they spend 90% of their time with. And over the last 4 or 5 years, prehab is one of the most used words when it comes to maintaining and developing fast bowlers. As Gareth said, they're trying to prepare to the body so it's not going to get injured rather than wait for something to happen. And why we don't do this as much with spinners, I don't know. And I know a couple of spinners that I work with, and they have a stress ball which they kind of use quite a bit, which I guess is probably quite similar to the old plasticine thing that Gareth
Yeah,
is talking
definitely.
about. And if you can build it into your routine and you can find something that works for you and a method that is suitable, and you can take it around with you, and you can just have maybe before the game and after the game just to prepare those fingers for what you're about to do, then that's absolutely great. And ultimately, your fingers are going to be one of your biggest assets as a cricketer, so you've got to look after them. So yeah, any method you can have. Gareth's given you a long list of different options there, so trial each one over a couple of weeks, and then after a couple of months you can probably settle on one thing and then try and work it into your program.
The nice thing I think, Sam, is that the strategies that we've given there are all things that you can do whilst you're watching, can't you? So if you have happened to bowl first and the side of batting, you can sit there and nobody needs to know about any of those things that you're doing. You can still have the conversations and contribute in the same way as you normally would do. But whilst you're doing that, you can be, massaging the joints or using the stress ball or the plasticine as we've outlined.
Yeah, and it's great when you can offer a solution or a range of solutions, and you don't need an iPad, you don't need a PowerPoint, you don't need someone else to do something, you don't need to spend £100 a month. You can just get on with it, can't you? There's no cost involved. That, well, there's maybe might cost you 50p for a bit of blue tack or whatever, but it's a simple way to do something that's really important.
And oh, that's one of the mottos of this show, isn't it? Get on with
Well, it's become that way, and
it.
yeah, I suppose so. But no, I think that we've covered that really well there, and let us know how you get on.
Yep.
Okay, so it's time for the soapbox, which means it is over to one of our team to have 60 seconds to rant and rave about whatever's getting to them at the moment. Today's going to be David. So, David, 60 seconds on the clock. Over to you.
I wrote an article this week about a new idea, or probably not a new idea, but certainly a concept that is challenging to what people think about the format of cricket. And as a general principle on top of that, I wanted to talk about the idea of being open to ideas. A lot of the time when new ideas come up, people will reject them immediately out of hand, and they'll say something like, that will never work for us, or that's not something that has ever worked for us in the past, it's not going to work now. And landscapes change, things are different, people do things in different ways, and as the situation of the world changes, you have to rethink things sometimes. And if you take new ideas and dismiss them out of hand before you've even had a chance to consider them or try them or trial them, then you might be losing out on something which is very easy to implement and very simple to improve the game of cricket. And that is the end of the show for this week. Before we leave, there's a couple of things we need to sort out, and the most important of those is the winner of this week's prize, the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we had two questions, one from Sarvish about grip stance and backlift, and one from Yasha Warden about finger pain. Which one did you prefer, Gareth?
Well, I thought both really good questions, but I'm going to go with Yasha Warden this week because it's an unusual question. But I thought we came up with some good strategies. And the most important thing is that we're looking forward to hearing how it all went.
Yeah, please get back in touch with us and let us know what worked for you in the end, if anything. Or is it something that you're just going to have to manage? We don't know. We'll find out. Now, if someone wanted to send in their question and win the prize, Gareth, how would they do that?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's true. You can find us on Twitter at Pitch Vision Acad is where we are there, and on Facebook. Our Facebook is very simply facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and we're posting lots of stuff up there all the time. If you want to listen to this show every week, you can subscribe. This, of course, is the sixth series, so we're getting the hang of it now. If you want to do that, just find your favourite podcast app or program on your computer. iTunes is a popular one. Do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. Brand new logo for this season as well. Click the subscribe button and we'll do the rest. And if you want to do it the old-fashioned way, go to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link for the details about the RSS feed. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavers.
Cheers, fellas.
Thanks, guys.